Welcome to a special prospect interview here at No Ceilings. I'm Maxwell Baumbach, and today I am joined by Stanford's Spencer Jones. He is going to be a graduate player this year. Very excited to see what he does on the court this season. Spencer, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Maxwell. What about yourself?
I'm doing good. I'm excited to talk about your game, your journey. And the first thing I always like to do, because there's always people every year that they're just starting to get into the NBA draft and just starting to get into college basketball. They're kind of NBA fans first and foremost. They're just starting to dip their toe in and watch a bit more college and things like that. For people who have never seen you play before, how would you describe your game to them?
How'd I describe my game? I'd say definitely started off much as like a 3-and-D prospect. Really molded my game. Lots of Klay Thompson. A lot of people will see that. You'll see a lot of catch and shoot threes, moving a lot without the ball, cutting, stuff like that. And then also intense defense that I've tried to pick up over the years. Now, especially these last 2 years, a little bit more playmaking, a little bit more getting to the mid-range, posts, stuff like that. So you'll see a combination of it all, but kind of all developed from that kind of the 3-and-D mold.
For sure. And it's interesting you mentioned like Klay Thompson is one of those guys, because I feel like that was something that a lot of people forget looking back at him coming out of college, was that was kind of a strength of his at the time, was like he had this nice little post up game, mid post game. So it's all there. That's a really cool one. I know you mentioned him. Were there other guys that you kind of modeled your game after, whether it's current players or guys that you watched growing up that kind of shaped how you view the game and how, you know, the player that you wanted to turn into?
Yeah. Klay was huge. The very first one was Ray Allen. Especially back 08 Celtics. That was when I really started looking at older guys. And then after that, it was, you know, once I got to college, it was like guys who already made it. So I really started looking at like Sadiq Bey, was a couple years older than me, and then Desmond Bane and stuff like that. You know, you take guys who are a little bit closer to you who, you know, you translate right into your game immediately.
For sure. And just kind of to go back even before that, what was the first thing that got you into basketball growing up? Like what kind of first captured your interest and got you into the sport?
Yeah, so I'd probably say the first thing was just, you know, I got an older brother, so, and then, you know, the people in the neighborhood were more around his age, so I'd always see him, like, shooting hoops outside, and then, you know, you're just a younger brother, you're just trying to be included and stuff, so that's kind of how it started. I just, you know, I always wanted to be in there when I was, like, 5, but didn't get big enough until I was about, like, 6, 7, or something like that, so that's when it really started, and then, you know, I just loved having a ball in my hands. Dad got me a pop-a-shot machine in the basement, and I stayed on that for hours. So he likes to credit that for me developing my shot. But after about 6, I was kind of in love with it.
That's awesome. Did you play any other sports, or were you just kind of basketball?
Yeah, no, I played baseball up until high school. I was pretty good at that. My dad actually kind of wanted me to keep doing it. The game was a little too slow. Same with football, but summer workouts were – too much. I knew I didn't love it enough to be putting a helmet on the heat. And then, you know, my dad also made me do a little cross country, but that was more just a shape for basketball. That's pretty much all that was.
For sure. So you had, you know, you get to high school, you had a really illustrious basketball career in high school. You won 3 state titles. You won a Durano Award, which in Kansas is an award that goes to the best player in the state. A guy like Mark Mitchell recently won that award. So a lot of great players have won that. You were a top, you know, consensus, like top 50 kind of recruit coming out of high school. You chose to attend Stanford. What was it that ultimately led you to attending Stanford?
The recruiting phase was a very interesting one. Like you said, I did go to a really high profile kind of basketball school in Bishop Miege. So I didn't really play very significant minutes until about my junior year. Was really when I started getting really significant minutes on the team, just because we were stacked and really wasn't, I could have transferred to, you know, any of the other public schools and would have got much more time. And then senior year, I finally was, you know, got the main role. And so the recruiting came a little bit later than you expect. And even then, even in my senior year, when I was, you know, averaging about near 20 and leading in most of the statistical categories, it's still like I knew it could get better. So we were actually looking into post grad year by the end of my senior year. We were looking at that, and so I played like another weekend into my senior year, because I'm kind of a little young for my class. So we played another year of AAU and just one weekend, and then that just, it completely blew up. And so like, and this was all in like May, I think, like, yeah, like May, April, stuff like that. And you know, I remember being in like Bishop Miege, like after school and like in like May or like April. And I got like, I have to stay after school because I got like seven coaches coming, you know, all to do like back to back to back interviews. Like I stayed, it's like right after school, straight into interviews and talking to coaches. I stayed at school till like 7:30, you know, from like 3:30 to 7:30 with my parents. And Stanford was one of those that came out and, you know, showed interest, but they didn't really give me a full offer yet. And actually, you know, I didn't know this at the time because I hadn't taken that many official visits, but when I took my official visit, they made me practice with the team. I thought that was like a customary kind of thing, or it's like something because you did, but it was really like, they tell me now they tell me it was really just a tryout. So I did well, got the offer there, and then, you know, sat on it for about a week, but I kind of knew it's kind of one of the dream schools I've always had in the back of my mind. And so I took it pretty quickly.
So with like, what was kind of your mindset like at the time? Cause like what you're describing is a pretty wild process. Like as somebody who went to school, and I'm not trying to brag, I almost did Division III track in college. So obviously not, you know, dealing with any sort of recruitment or anything like that. But like, I remember I didn't pick the school I was going to go to until like March. And that was way, way late. So like, you're talking like in May, and obviously you're somebody who has the goal of playing college basketball. Like in the months leading up to that, what was that like? Like, were you sweating it out? Were you nervous about that at all? Or were you considering like, maybe I'll go somewhere I don't really want to go just to go? Like, what was that kind of like mentally?
Yeah, I was sweating it. I was sweating it. But there was one thing, like my parents were huge academic people. So we weren't, what we did is the senior year, I applied like a regular student, and that was going to be like my baseline schools, like stuff like DePaul. I'm trying to think what else, like maybe Loyola Chicago, stuff like that.
Yep.
You know, like schools, and that was going to be my academic baseline. So I wasn't going to take a school that was academically less than that, unless it was a really good basketball school. So that was the baseline. Then since then I remember Northwestern came along in senior year, but we did ended up losing that game, and I didn't end up getting that offer. And so I was actually that right after that, I was kind of starting to sweat it, because I was like, okay, I thought that was going to be the one.
Yeah.
So I was pretty frustrated about that. And that was after that, we started thinking about the post-grad year. And so then I was just kind of like, all right, we'll just do this post-grad year. I'll just really work on my game, refine my game. Cause I knew the offers would come, just because like I said, over that year, they just got better and better and better if I just had more time and for people to come out and see me. And so, yeah, I just, after that, I was frustrated, but then I just stuck my head down and said, screw it. Let's just put in the work. Let's go out, have a great AAU weekend. And all it took was one. And then everything just blew up from there. So,
man, you're killing me though, like listing all these Chicago schools. Like it would have been a lot more convenient for me if you were in the area for in-person scouting, but what can you do? So we're going to take a quick break. After that, we're going to talk a little bit about your journey at Stanford, and we'll be back right on the other side. All right. So at Stanford, you took on a pretty sizable role kind of out of the gate. Like you started 29 out of 32 games your freshman season. Is that what you expected, or was that something where you got to campus and it just kind of worked out that way?
I didn't expect it. And it was kind of funny, like me and Tyrell, who ended up being the one and done after that year, he didn't, if you asked him, he would say he definitely didn't expect his role either. We kind of both came in pretty skinny, pretty small. I mean, I was able to put on weight a little bit more easily than he was, but he definitely figured out the offense a little bit better than I did. But no, all I was looking for is just what the team needed, what could get me, you know, any minutes at all. And, you know, I knew I was a pretty good shooter. I wasn't really shooting threes at as high as a volume as I did in college when I was in high school, just because I was a little bit taller. We had a little bit older school system, so I got a lot of my points around the mid-range. So I had a really good mid-range, and I could shoot threes well. I just wouldn't shoot them at a very high level. So I noticed that, you know, the team needed a little bit of three-point shooting. We had a lot of slashers. Oscar Silva was a great postman, so it was like, all right, we need some outside shooting from the wing position. And I was like, you know what, let me just get in the gym, put up as many shots as I can, and ended up doing well with that. And then, you know, Coach has a pretty defensive-minded coach, so you can't get away without playing it on both ends. And that's kind of how I've always been anyway. So I just ended up just doing those little things. And that's kind of what I focused on. And yeah, I ended up getting the starting spot and doing pretty well with it.
For sure. And then your junior year was where it really felt like you started to take on a bigger role offensively? Like, you were never a guy where it's like, oh, he doesn't really do anything on offense. Like, that was never the case. Like, you were, you know, really valuable as a shooter and spot up guy. Junior year, we start to see you kind of take it inside more. We get to see a little bit more of the dimensions of your game. What was that like, you know, junior year and then this past season, your senior season, where you were sort of, you know, leading man, leading scorer and things like that? How was that adjustment for you? And again, was it, did it go how you expected? Were there things that you picked up?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of those things, you know, how it always is. The longer you stay in college and the more trust you gain with coaches, the bigger your role is going to get, the more trust you're going to get. So, you know, I knew that was coming, especially that junior year with the departures of so many guys that I came in with that, that played huge roles. I was like, all right, it's kind of going to be my time to step it up there. Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of challenges. I've always been a guy who kind of puts his head down and just does the work and not extremely vocal. So that was something I really had to get out of my comfort zone, especially that year, and then obviously the years following. Mm-hmm. So that was big, trying to be a leader, especially, you know, thrusted in the junior year too. You know, you still got some seniors who, you know, you may have a little bit of a leadership position over, but they're still older, so it's navigating mm-hmm. that dynamic as well. But yeah, and then also just having the defensive attention. You know, I was so used to benefiting from, like, the older guys would, the great slashers we had, like Dejon Davis and Bryce Wills, you know, they would collapse the defense and then boom, I'd be open. But, you know, now mm-hmm. it's kind of time for me to, you know, get that defensive attention and have to kind of make plays out of that. And that's what each year I've been getting kind of better and better at. So that was something to adjust to.
For sure. For sure. So this is the last one I'm going to ask you before we take our final break of the show. But you had, you know, really good season last year, second team All Pac-12, had a solid level of buzz coming out of the season in terms of NBA prospects, things like that. Like, you were consistently ranked in ESPN's top 100. And then the season ends, and almost like immediately afterward, you announced you were going back to Stanford doing the grad year. Took a lot of people by surprise. We saw a lot of players do that last year, where not only did a lot of guys go back, but a lot of people made that decision like kind of quickly. So in your case, what was it that you just said, like, hey, the season's over and I'm going back? Because I think a lot of people, like myself, kind of expected you to at least test the draft mm-hmm. waters. So what led to that decision?
Yeah, you know, I like how you say it was quickly. It didn't feel that quick. a lot of conversations, a lot of mm-hmm. thinking that goes into it. I considered all options. I considered, you know, testing the waters, maybe transferring to another different school, or coming back. I knew either way, you know, after 4 years, you know, the schools, you know, the school, which is, you know, one of the main draws of Stanford, you know, you kind of finished that. So it was going to be just a whole basketball decision. So first of all, I, you know, you think about testing the waters and I'm like, you know what? I have one more year of eligibility. The older you get, you know, you're kind of that whole potential draw in the, you know, in the NBA draft kind of goes away. So then it becomes kind of more important, I felt, to just come out as the best prospect you can kind of be. So that was kind of the big thing there. So I was like, you know what, if I feel like I can really get better in this next year and really, really improve on some things, show some scouts a little bit something else and just come back as the best player I can be, because they probably see me as a plug and play guy anyways, you know? So I felt like it was a smart decision there. And so after I kind of figured that out, the next thing was, you know, do I go somewhere else that could maybe give me a little bit more publicity someplace where, you know, since I haven't had the as great success as I've wanted from a wins and losses category at Stanford, should I go somewhere else, you know? So that was really, really the big decision there. Fortunately, I didn't have to really test the portal to kind of know other options. You know how kind of everybody gathers mm-hmm. around the Final Four and they, you know, you know, gives out, you know, information, things they're thinking about, coaches and everybody. So, you know, I was able to get a lot of information, obviously not directly, but just figure things out there to where I didn't really have to deal with all the phone calls and everything and how crazy it can be when you're into the portal and stuff like that. So I had all the information in front of me and it really just came down to, you know, I'm not going to have any better role than I have on the Stanford team. I mean, I'm the number one guy. Coach has complete trust in me, and to build something like that up again is, you know, obviously you can't do that in a year with another guy. Mm-hmm. And so then it also came down to all the new additions we were getting. Got a grad transfer from Providence, really good point guard, mm-hmm. Two top 50 freshmen, and we're about to have probably one of the oldest starting five lineups. You know, in certainly in our conference, and all guys who I certainly trust. So I felt like, you know, this was as best of a chance we've had to win and get to the tournament as we had as my freshman year. And I felt like it would be a sore opportunity to miss out on that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I really like a lot of the returning guys that you've got on that team. Like you mentioned, like Bynum coming over, and then, you know, Brandon Angel's back, Michael yes. Jones is back. A lot of returning talent. And then, yeah, the top 50 freshmen. I mean, you've got Kenan Carlisle, you've got Stojakovic. Like there's real, real talent on that team. So definitely a team that we're excited to watch. And I want to commend you on the decision to go back, because I think a lot of times guys get so excited and kind of get stars in their eyes about like, oh, I can play in the NBA and whatever. And I think the real thing you want to look for is not like, can I get that first contract, but what can I do to best position myself to get the second one?
Exactly.
And I think a lot of people can overlook that. So I want to commend you on that. And then we're going to come back. We're going to get kind of a little bit more to the intricacies of your game in a little bit here. So stay with us. So obviously one of biggest strengths, something that there's going to be an article that kind of is, if you're watching this or listening to the podcast, go to noslingsnba.com as well. We're going to have a full article breaking down Spencer's game. The biggest thing that kind of stood out from a pure numbers perspective, and obviously it shows up on the tape as well, is that you're a very good three-point shooter and a very good defender. On the three-point shooting front, you were a guy who, 6'7", good size. And then over four seasons in a great conference, you've shot 39.4% from three on high volume. How have you developed your shot over the years, and how have you maintained that efficiency while taking on that bigger role, like you mentioned? Because a lot of guys can shoot a high percentage, the role increases, and there's usually like a bit of a give and take in terms of, where you're slotted in terms of offensive priority and where the percentage goes.
Yeah, absolutely. And you kind of, if you ever go look at my stats, you can kind of see that. Obviously, my best shooting year was my freshman year, when, guys don't know you so much. And you're, like I said, we had great penetrators that got me open all the time. So a lot of my looks were very clean. So, I mean, hopefully that would bode well to the next level, playing with a bunch of guys who are also really, really good at that. So, but yeah, since then it's been a lot more contested catches, a lot more moving off the ball. That's really what since my freshman year I've really worked on, is just how well I can move off the ball and create space, without the ball in my hands, especially the first couple of years, because I didn't have it in my hands. Now these last few years, I'm becoming much more of a primary ball handler, facilitator off my own, pick and rolls and stuff like that. So it's, creating it more and more off the bounce. That's definitely something I'm trying to, trying to get better at every year. And then also extending the range, the farther and farther you can step out a little bit from that 3-point line, can just space out the defense even more and more, and, not only create more opportunities for yourself, but for others. So those are the two things with the shooting. But how I've kind of maintained the consistency, I mean, just really just getting in the gym. And I mean, everybody thinks I have kind of a little bit of a funky jumper. I don't really try to fix too much mechanically. All I try to fix is the only thing I really focus on is how quick I'm setting my feet and how balanced I am in my shots, and maybe just sticking a couple more shots, just landing in the same place and instead of landing a little bit off balance. So that's really the main thing I focus on, is just balance. And then, it's a quick shot, so it's too quick for me to think about it. So that's probably a good thing.
That's good. I was going to say, that's great. It's always easier to adjust to the next level too, when there's so much more length and speed and athleticism on the court. The quicker you can get it off, the better you're going to be. So something else though, you're not like one of these guys who's just a shooter. Cause like there's a lot of times where a guy will get a 3-and-D label put on them, and like, that's legitimately all they are. Like there's not much in between sometimes. You're not one of those guys. You've really grown at attacking the rim because of your size. You're a guy who's physically strong. You can kind of bully around smaller guys. You're not a shooter that they can just hide a point guard on or something like that, chase you around a little bit. What, given that you have that element of your game as well, that you can take it inside, that you can operate in the post, in the mid post, what is your process like when you're kind of spotting up and you catch the ball? Like what are you looking for? How do you decide what you're going to do and where you're going to take things?
Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing is always you see how much space you got. Like if it looks like they're closing out short, you're letting that go all the time, every single time. And then kind of after that, I'm kind of reading the gaps, really, where the help defender's at. Is there the lane there? That was thing early on, is I try to drive it without kind of looking at the lane. Then, next thing you know, you're kind of getting the ball swiped away from you, or it's just a little too crowded. So that's kind of been those are kind of really the main two things. And then after that, it's, basketball is just a lot of read and react. You don't want to ever, look too far ahead and try to telegraph what you're doing. But those are kind of the two main things. And then, next thing is like, if I'm driving and I get cut off, it's always, the big thing I've worked at, especially that going in that junior year, was turning it into a self post. Like you said, I'm 6'7", 225, almost 230. So I'm bigger than, probably 80% of the guys I'm driving against. So that's a huge advantage. And especially even if it's not for score, always, I'm most likely drawing a second defender, and then boom, you send the defense into rotations. That usually gets an open shot for somebody else. So that's kind of the big thing this year, is just, like I said, just reading the defense a lot more, drawing those kind of doubles or that extra attention, and then making that pass or that second read out of it. I really started figuring that out a little bit towards the end of last season. I know the assist numbers haven't been ever really crazy high, usually around like one to two. But last year I started pulling out some games where, maybe there's a couple three assist games, four assist games, and that definitely opens some eyes in the playmaking category for scouts as well. So
For sure. And you cut your turnovers as well last year too. Was that just like a function of getting more comfortable with that lead role?
yeah, absolutely. It was 100% getting comfortable with that lead role. 'Cause I go in the first two years, like I'm not getting much, many reps coming off ball screen and stuff like that. I'm usually a throwback guy for that catch and shoot three. So, once it came the junior year, I'm like, okay, I really gotta up these reps and get more comfortable with these reads in both hands and stuff like that. Now I feel very comfortable, seeing all three reads coming out of a pick and roll, like seeing the big rolling, seeing the opposite corner, seeing the throwback guy, or even seeing your shot. So just knowing you have all those options all times, knowing how to read the defense, and then the next step is kind of how to manipulate them, how to get a shot fake to get them out of this position to open up a passing lane, or how to use your eyes to sink them in or sink them out, stuff like that. All those little nuances or stuff I keep trying to add on.
For sure. And so one thing I will kind of want to touch on with you, because I think a lot of times with basketball, we get really wrapped up in numbers or just kind of like archetype, like very, very specific things. And I think one thing that often gets overlooked is the physical element of basketball in terms of analysis. You were a guy who is really physically strong, and you're in really good shape as well. So like you're one of these guys that you can screen. It's screened well and effectively. And in the NBA game now, like guards are setting screens. Like everybody's screening to move and get open. So you're able to do all that. And then on the defensive end as well, like it's just really hard to mismatch you, because like you can stick with a lot of guys, tough to boss around. What does that do for you on the court to be able to be as strong and mobile as you are? And is it something that you've been focused on developing, or is it just something like that's just kind of how it's always been for you?
It definitely hasn't always been like that for me. I mean, I've always been taller, taller than most people in my position, but stronger. That kind of came, really started really focusing on it sophomore year, just really trying to get something out of that COVID year, all those extra times in the gym. And actually, they were. I remember, the coach was still trying to figure out, do we want to play more three, more four, and they were thinking more four. So like strength coach was like, all right, let's put on a little bit of weight. I think I got on to like 235, and they were like, you actually are a little bit more of a wing, so let's slim you down a little bit. And then I think that's where it really came. I slimmed down, but I was able to kind of keep all that muscle. And so that's kind of, I've always felt like I've been kind of stronger than everybody I'm going against since then. But yeah, no, it definitely helps my game. Like you said, the screening, I mean, that's one thing a lot of kids don't notice, is that the better you are at setting screens as a shooter, that's usually going to get you open, because it's going to make the defense collapse. If you're setting a great screen, it's going to cause maybe your defender to overhelp. Boom, you're coming off a secondary screen, you're gonna be a little bit more open. So that's kind of how I get some of my looks or some of my space as well. And then on defense, I've always kind of prided myself on the defensive end. I remember my first AAU coach used to throw chairs when I was playing bad defense. So he's kind of instilled it in me. And then my high school coach was a big defensive guy. Coach Hass is a big defensive guy. So I've always had that around me. And I've also learned from, like I said, those two guards, Dejan and Bryce. They were so versatile. Not quite as big as me, but they flew around the court, and kind of their chemistry they had together, like how they just knew how to read situations, how they knew how to close out, help other guys while still defending their guy. It's kind of something I've kind of learned a lot from them, and kind of instilled into me. So I've always just loved pride myself on that end of the floor.
For sure. So yeah, so let's get into the defense. You were somebody who a lot of times was drawing the toughest assignment, like even in games where you'd be playing a team with, you know, a really good guard and things like that. Sometimes you'd get, you know, assigned to the point guard on the other team. Sometimes you're taking whoever the best wing is. How is having that type of role paired with like what you're doing on offense and then still kind of having to maintain that level of consistency and effort on defense, where a lot of times the guy's a, you know, leading scorer, hey, you know, take it easy on that side of the floor. How has it been just for your development to have to kind of play that sort of role where it's like, hey, we know that you're doing this on offense, but you got a lockdown over there as well?
Yeah, that was kind of the outside of the leadership my junior year. That was the second hardest thing to try to figure out, because it's kind of like, you know, I never thought I was ever in bad shape, but it was just like, man, maybe I need to be in a little bit more shape, you know, like elite shape to really do this 2N thing, or just kind of like figure out how, you know, how much energy I need to be expending. Cause like, you know, like I said, I take so much pride on it. Sometimes I'll go through a defensive possession where I'm like, you know, especially smaller guards, man, you got to chase them around so many screens, like you're exhausted. And then I got to come around, I'm the shooter on my team, so I got to come around and run around my screens. By the end of time you do that, you know, down and back about twice, and you're pretty gassed out. You're kind of waiting for that next media. So it was definitely figuring out how to kind of pick your spots on defense, like when to really get up in guys in certain moments, especially when you needed to stop versus trying to do it. Maybe, you know, obviously I want to do it all the time, but trying to manage that load either time, you know, on both ways. So that was certainly the biggest thing. But, you know, I always welcome the challenge. It's made me the better defender. The fact that I can, you know, guard the best 4 men on the team, or maybe the best 2 men, you know, whoever it is, I'm usually on them, just because I have, you know, quick enough laterally, obviously strong enough, and then the length always helps. So that's, you know, that's always been a plus for me.
Yeah, and I think something that gets lost a lot of times too, that, you know, we don't consider when we're watching the game at home, is that just from like a scheme and coaching standpoint, like your team also needs you to stay out of foul trouble. Like that's a big thing that I think a lot of times like star players don't get credit for in college. It's like, oh, you know, you should have gone harder after that or whatever. And it's like, yeah, maybe, but like if he's got 3 already and then he gets 4 and there's 10 minutes left in this game, like that's something you got to avoid.
Yeah, those tic-tac fouls usually kind of get me. Those ones that kind of look like a foul, could go either way, you know, you're trying to get a steal, you know, that's the big thing the coaches have always, especially in practice, they purposely call it tight on me, just to tell me, okay, you don't always need to go for that block, go for that steal, even if you get it half the time, it's not worth it when you don't, you know. So that's kind of the big thing. I've had some issues in foul trouble, you know, in some stretches every year, so that's something I'm always have to be conscious to crack down on.
For sure. Well, while we're talking blocks and steals, let's talk about just defending a team concept, because that's an area where you've always sort of stood out, is steal rate, block rate. Feels like you're not really out of place. You know where to go on defense. How have you been able to become a positive force for your team in that respect? Was it something that sort of an innate feel sort of thing? Is it being coached up? Is it film? Like, how have you kind of honed your defensive instincts?
Yeah. For the first 2 years, it was watching Dejan and Bryce forever, and just watching how their chemistry together, you know, why they did certain things, and just like it was all really reading their anticipation, like how they were able to kind of anticipate these things, what they were seeing. That's kind of been the biggest thing for me, like knowing when to stunt, knowing how far to be in help. And then, you know, obviously I had to adjust it a little bit because they were quite a bit faster than me. So it was like, you know, maybe I can't be this far out and help. And then, you know, when they swing the ball the other side to my man, maybe I'm in too far of a closeout to where it's a little hard to keep them in front. So it's also knowing my limits. And then, you know, once you kind of figure those out, you kind of know, you know, what the best position for you is in most situations, especially, you know, the more years you play the game and more situations you see and stuff like that. And so it was that. And then second, when, you know, I finally started getting a little bit of this muscle, it's how to use this physicality, how to bump guys off their spots. The biggest thing is kind of, you know, I was kind of like to be the defender that kind of, you know, pushes the envelope and kind of, you know, forces myself upon them, rather than kind of reacting too much to them. It makes it a bit easier, but, you know, like you said, you got to stay out of foul trouble when you try to do that. So,
yeah,
but yeah, that's the biggest thing. My anticipation, is really what's improved. And, you know, when you have great anticipation, it makes a lot of things easier.
For sure. So what would you say, kind of going into this final year at Stanford now, has been the thing that you have been most focused on developing in your game this offseason? Like, what are people going to see this year that, like, hey, that's a little bit new, or hey, this took a step forward? Is there any one thing, or are there a few areas that, like, you're really proud of the work that you've done?
For me, so I'll be coming off, I'll probably be coming off the most ball screens I've probably ever come off since I've been here. So the assist numbers you'll definitely see go up, and just the reads, even if it's not quite an assist, but it's just like, you see the defense rotate, you get them to rotate, and maybe it's one or more extra pass to get an open shot and stuff like that. So it's kind of like those high level reads, and then getting in the lane, float to that little 12, that little 8 to 15 range is also been an emphasis for me. Just because I'm taller, I can rise up over guys, so really developing that. And it's also an easier, pretty easy shot to get to in crunch time. So definitely those two areas. Definitely look to see those assist numbers coming up, and then just a little more off the dribble threes and a little bit more range. Those are really the huge keys on offense I've focused on.
That's awesome. That's great to hear. We're looking forward to seeing it. And we appreciate you taking the time to join us here. If people want to follow along the Spencer Jones journey, where can they follow you on social media?
Yeah, I'm at SK Jones 24 on Instagram.
Awesome. Well, give Spencer a follow. Spencer, we appreciate you so much for taking the time here. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. If you're not subscribed to us on YouTube, subscribe there, subscribe on our podcast feed, and subscribe to our Substack, NoCeilingsNBA.com, for daily written content on the NBA draft. Thank you all very much for joining us.